You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 26th of January. Domination, the definition of domination. Why the Knicks are such a difficult matchup. What are the power rankings saying about the Jazz? And a tribute on the anniversary of Kobe Bryant's death. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making it way better to be a Jazz fan. All right, hopefully you caught the new Locked On Today, our brand new podcast giving you all the sports news and debates you need in 20 minutes every single day. Locked On Today, Locked On Bets is our 15-minute quick-hitting gambling show, the podcast network filling out its complete lineup of shows for you. All right, here's what we're doing today. The last segment is from Rejecting the Screen, another one of our national podcasts, who took a they're doing a two-day celebration of Kobe. With all the stories they've been given over the years from players about what it's been like to what it was like to be around him from high school all the way through retirement. That's it, Rejecting the Screen. So that's our third segment today. I wanted to get into domination because that's what the Jazz are doing and walk you through some things I thought were incredible. So first thing is there's two things. Anytime, I feel like if you can just have great quarters, that's a sign of domination. Okay. So the league average offensive rating is about 111 right now. If you're over 120 as an offense or under 100 as an offense, that's pretty dominating. That alters that's a dominating performance. If you do it in a quarter, it's a pretty outstanding way to start the game. Here's what's crazy about what the Jazz have done this year. First of all, their first quarter average is 101.3. It's actually only the fourth best in the NBA. I'm surprised by that. But the Jazz have held someone under 100 in 10 games so far this year. So in 10, the Jazz are 16, or what are we? I don't even know our record. 13-4? 12-4? The Jazz have held, yeah, we've played 16 games, so we're 12-4. In 10 of the 16 games in the first quarter, we've held someone to below a point of possession. We didn't do it against the Warriors. We didn't actually do it against the Pelicans. We didn't do it against the Nuggets. They actually torched us, and we didn't do it against Brooklyn. They really torched us. We were down 21. We've actually only trailed since that Brooklyn game once at the end of the first quarter. That was against the Pelicans. Otherwise, we've led. Our offense in the first quarter has been over 120 in three of our last four games, in five of our last seven games. Check that. In four of our last seven games. In five of our last eight games. And on three other occasions during the year. So in eight of our 16 first quarters, our offense has been plus 120 and our defense has been minus 100. Like that's a pretty impressive way to start a basketball game every night. Now, if you walk through quarter by quarter, it's not as impressive because you're already ahead, right? And our second quarters have traditionally never been where we're at our best. Our third quarters have always been where we're at our best under Quinn Snyder. That's kind of always been. But defensively, in the second quarter, which is now where Favors and Gobert switch, amazingly, in our last 10 games, we've been under 100 in eight of our last 10 in the second quarter. Eight of our last 10, nine for the season. That's dominating. The Warriors had a 60 defensive rating the other night. Our offense is not as good. Our last two have been over 120. Three of our last five of our last eight. And that's it. Oh, and opening night against Portland. So six. Not as dominating. That defensive run we're on in the second quarter is pretty incredible. Brooklyn had a 97. Knicks had a 95. Bucks had a 107. Detroit had a 92. Cleveland had a 75. Atlanta a 96. Denver 112. Pelicans 96. Pelicans 91. Warriors 60. Our defensive rating in the second quarters is, as a team now, is below 100. 98.5. Again, only the fourth best in the league. Sample sizes are small enough that other people are as dominating. But that's a, those are pretty telling numbers. Third quarter, it's the same story. In the third quarter, our last six games are 87, 99.7, 91.8, 91.9, 86.7, and 100.5 defensively. In five of the last six third quarters, we have held people below 100 offensive rating. Now, that's Cleveland, Atlanta, Denver, Pelicans twice, and the Warriors. I mean, that's five bad teams in Denver. The offense in the third quarter has been pretty dominating. Oklahoma City, 126. Phoenix, 121. Clippers, 136. San Antonio, 130. Bucks, 156. Cleveland, 150. Pelicans, 154. Warriors, 143. We're not going over 120 in these games. In eight of the 16 games, we're like shattering it. We've been over 130 in six games this year in an offensive rating in the third quarter. We have the third best offense in third quarters. And on the defensive end, not only those five, but another, so in nine of the 16 quarters in the third quarter, have we been absolutely dominating. The fourth quarters, we've been ahead by a lot, so we're not nearly as good. I almost need to run a new sheet that just tells you the defense in the fourth quarters, we rank 27th in the NBA, and offense, we rank 14th. Like, it's time to start. I don't have the capability of doing this. I'll build it today. I might be able to build it really quickly right now. I don't know that I could do that. I'm not that good. But it would be, you know, what you suddenly are, what we're talking about is, you know, what are we in period? What is everybody in periods one through three, right? How do we compare to teams one through three? That would tell us something. So that's dominating. That when you're having those kind of quarters, that's dominating. The Knicks are a tough matchup for us for a few reasons. They run a lot of isolation. Julius Randle will just come at you, and Mitchell Robinson. And so, you know, at a position where we don't defend great. They also have done a wonderful job defensively under Tom Thibodeau. They're the fourth best defense. They're the number one defense against the shot. They sit in the shell. They don't force turnovers. And they've done a really good job against the three. So they're not allowing teams, not only are they not, they're 27th in allowing threes, which is interesting, but they're not, they're somehow either very fortunate at 31.5% or they're doing something in that regard. But they are allowing opponents to take 40% of their shots as threes. Most of them are above the break, 32% of those. And they also allow a lot of shots at the rim. And then they defend those really well. So the Knicks are, here's an interesting one about the Knicks tonight. They're the number one effective field goal percentage defense in the league. And they're 29th in the league in location effective field goal percentage. Now, if you've listened to the show a lot, you know that I really believe in that. We're the third best team in the league in location effective field goal percentage and the second best team in effective field goal percentage defense. That makes sense to me. Washington is the number one team in the league in location effective field goal percentage and 27th in effective field goal percentage. I have a hard time believing that is going to last. The same way, I don't really buy what the Knicks are doing. I don't think you can be the number one effective field goal percentage defense 29th and have a 5-point differential. Again, let's use the same thing we did yesterday on the show. Hopefully you listened. If you didn't, I understand, but you could do this every day. We do it every day. Like, if you look at last year, the best effective field goal percentage defense in the league was Milwaukee. They had a 3 percentage point differential between their location and their defense. Toronto had a 3 percentage point difference. Then it went to the Clippers at 2, and then it went to Boston at 2. The worst in the league was Washington last year, again, at 3%, and then it went to Cleveland at 2. So if we look at that again for the last, I'm going somewhere with this, trust me. If we look at that for 18-19, and we look at the same exact thing, the Warriors were the, on defense, remember this is on defense, so you can be a great shooting team, right? And you could be 3 or 4 percentage points better than your effective field goal percentage on offense because you're just an unbelievably well above average shooting team. But defensively, it's really a lot to do with luck. And if you go back and look at that in 18-19, we were the number one effective field goal percentage defense, 1.3% off our location defense. Then Milwaukee was 1.5. Then Golden State 1.1 off of it. Then Toronto 1.8. So the best defensive teams in the league can only impact their defensive effective field goal percentage about 2 percentage points off their location effective field goal percentage, which is why I believe in that so badly. What the hell am I talking about, you're asking? Location effective field goal percentage is the average percentage based on where the shots were taken. Over playing 29 teams over 82 games or 72 games, that equals out. And what I'm saying is you really can only be 2 percentage points off of that over a year. If you're really, really good, you can keep people about 2 percentage points below where you are. That's why it's so important to be great at location effective field goal percentage defensively. And we're right now the number 3 team in the league. We'll probably get to number 1 or 2. And right now we're 3 percentage points better than our location effective field goal percentage. And as I said yesterday, we're going to start to allow, people are going to make some more shots against us, and we're going to start missing shots. Like, this is going to come down a little bit. The variation of how we're performing right now is a little out of whack. New York is 5 percentage points difference. That's not possible. That just can't last. They'll be 2%. They're in trouble because that can't last. And they have terrible location effective field goal percentage, and that will eventually come back to bite them. Trust me. Did that make any sense? Are you buying? Locked On Bets is your daily podcast on the gambling sports betting world, but it's really more than that. It's a great deal of fun and a great show with your boy Q, who's super fun, dude, and Lee Sterling, a sports handicapper, breaking down the main games, the ones that are going to be on television, giving you sports insight. It's all brought to you by our friends on betonline.ag. That's betonline.ag. They do a great job, as I said, all week long. They kind of have an extra deal of fun with things, which I admire for them. Great Super Bowl prop bets are all there. You get a 50% welcome bonus as well as part of it with the promo code Locked On. That's a 50% welcome bonus with a promo code Locked On. So make sure you grab that and join over at betonline.ag. You can also follow them at betonline_AG, as those are... they have some other bonuses there for you and things like that. It's great, fun, good follow on the Twitter and on the Instagram. And those are exclusive partners and our friends over at betonline.ag. Today's show is brought to you by Built Bar. Protein bar? Candy bar? Hard to tell. It's that good. Built Bar with the fabulous flavors and the great macros. Hard for you to get anything much better than that. And now they have new Built Puffs. That's right, Puffs. They have coconut marshmallow and strawberry marshmallow. All there with their premium collagen protein blend. They have little Built Puffs. You'll see them there, but there's also the Built Bar, the grape. They're all on sale right now. Coconut, mint brownie, double chocolate, raspberry, orange, salted caramel, amazing flavors. Great debate yesterday on our NHL channel of whether they're better frozen or actually somebody was microwaving them and having them like melted. Seemed a little messy, but it sure is good. That's all at builtbar.com. Promo code Locked On. Or promo code Locked. I hear they get you different things. I don't know. It should be Locked On. 120 fewer calories, 3.5 fewer fat grams, 35 fewer carbs, 17 fewer sugar grams, and more protein. It's all at builtbar.com. I will remind you again, Locked On Today is your new daily podcast on all of the fun sports news of the day, 20 minutes, and gets you all the sports news you need for the day. I'll be listening to it the minute I finish recording this. All right, Tuesday's power ranking day. Usually we'll do it in the third segment, but because I want to put in the Kobe tribute in the third segment today, we'll do power rankings together. So let's start with CBS Sportsline power ranking. The number one team in their NBA power ranking is the Utah Jazz. That's right. The Utah Jazz are the number one power ranking team. They have the Jazz, quote, make it 8 in a row for the Jazz, who earned the top spot in this week's power ranking after putting on an absolute offensive clinic in 3 games. They've made nearly 17 threes per game, shot 40% from deep while putting up an offensive rating of 122. Utah's also set an NBA record for most three-pointers made in a team's first 15 games. Math and logic suggest they won't be able to keep this up, but boy, have they been fun to watch. Donovan Mitchell averaging 29.7 rebounds, 5 assists while going 13-23 from deep this week. So the Jazz are number 1, Clippers 2, Lakers 3, Sixers 4, and the Nuggets jump 7 spots to 5 with the Bucks followed by the Nets, Celtics, Spurs, and Blazers. That's CBS Sportsline. Let's go to NBA.com. I think John Schumann always does a great job, and their headliner is the Jazz. In week 6, it's time for the halfway mark of the first half of the season. That's right. By the way, we always say that you could be able to take 20 games in the season, take the schedule, and you'll have 14 of the 16 playoff teams. We're right about there now. It's 17 games as of tomorrow across the NBA. We'll be at just about the right amount of games because of the fact that the 72-game schedule. Plus-minus player of the week, Mike Conley, a plus 89 in 3 games last week. It's pretty good. West is now winning 58% of their games against the East, 43-31. Strength of schedule through week 5, Charlotte, Oklahoma City, and Memphis have had the toughest so far. John does a great job. I love these. All right, number 1 is the Lakers. Number 2 is the Clippers. Number 3 is the Utah Jazz. First 8-game win streak of the season, 7 of the 8 wins by double digits, led the Warriors by 40, ranking the top 3 on both ends of the floor. Using the starting lineup, the Utah starting lineup has outscored opponents by 38 points per 100 possessions in 129 minutes over the 8 games. That would be the first quarters we were just talking about. Donovan Mitchell started off slow, but the last 3 games, 29 points, true shooting percentage is 73, he says. Jazz are 2nd in 3-point percentage, and the percentage of their shots coming from 3, 47%. And they're shooting, they've shot 40% or better on at least 37 3 attempts in each of their last 5 games. One of their worst shooting games came against the Knicks, 14-44 from deep. And that's our matchup. So we'll see whether the Jazz can fix that. All right, NBA.com always does a great job. John Schumann, it's actually a great read. I really grabbed that just to catch up what's going on in the league. ESPN does a good job too. Lakers, Clippers, Jazz at 3. Oh, wait, by the way, I didn't continue. I think it's interesting to hear who the whole top 10 is. So NBA.com, Lakers, Clippers, Jazz, 76ers again, Bucks, Nuggets, Celtics, Nets, Blazers, Grizzlies. Okay? Grizzlies, like, without Jaren Jackson. Seems somewhat common thread there. ESPN has the Jazz at 3. The Jazz are the most prolific three-point shooting team in NBA history at this point. The Jazz have made at least 20 threes in 6 games before this season. They've done it a total of 6 times in franchise history. Donovan Mitchell gets his point. Same top 4. Lakers 1, Clippers 2, Jazz 3, 76ers 4. Same top 5. Bucks 5, Celtics 6, Nets 7. This all seems pretty common. 8 Nuggets. It's really top 8 teams in the league seem pretty set right now. Phoenix 9, Indiana 10. I would kind of think Indiana should be in there. All right, let's look at the numbers. So that's interesting. Those are personality pieces, right? That's what everybody thinks. That's what everyone thinks in that regard. Let's see what the numbers say. So Basketball Reference, using their SRS, which is their simple rating system, takes into account average point differential, strength of schedule. The rating is basically above or below average. So the Lakers are a plus 9.4 and the Bucks are a plus 8.9. So they're 1-2. Then the Jazz are 3. The Clippers are 4. And the Brooklyn Nets are 5 and the Nuggets are 6. And the Celtics are 7. The Suns are 8. The Sixers are 9. And the Hawks are 10. This tells me a few things. One is people are fatigued with the Bucks and don't really want to buy in. So they're not giving them the ratings. And they're 10-6. So people, but they're like, their plus minus is about a plus 9 right now. So they're every bit as dominant as ever before. It also tells me people are reluctant to buy into the Nets just because no one's quite sure, but yet their numbers show that they're pretty ready, whereas everyone's buying into the Sixers at 12-6, even though their strength of schedule's not been very good and their schedule's really crazy soft to what they've done. And so the Sixers are getting probably a little bit more love on these rating systems than the number system would tell you. The Lakers and the Bucks, the Jazz and the Clippers are dramatically better than anyone else. And frankly, the Lakers and Bucks are dramatically better than the Jazz and the Clippers, according to this. Then the Nets and the Nuggets are in their next tier and a decent sized drop to the Celtics and the Suns with another, and then the 76ers. So that's worth kind of keeping. Miami comes out just terribly on the number systems right now. It's like, it's worth, like, Miami's really their COVID's been broken apart, but it's real. Over on the projected rating system, full strength, 538 has the full strength ratings, and they have their projected record. So it depends kind of which way you want to look at it. Their full strength rating of all the talent on the roster: Lakers, Clippers, Nets, Bucks, Jazz. So we slide to 5. Celtics, Nuggets, Sixers all the way down to 8. Mavericks, 9. Raptors, 10. Their projected record: Lakers 5 games better than anybody else in the West. Jazz and Clippers at 48 each. Nuggets at 42. Really does not matter, frankly, if you're 2, 3, or 4. Other than you play a less good team on the bottom end, so I guess it does matter in that sense. Then a pretty good drop to the Mavericks at 42. The Suns at 41 in the West. So your 7 seed, you get a 38-win Spurs team. That would actually be a big deal. And then the Blazers maybe at 37, though. The Blazers without Nurkic are in trouble. Overall, the East, they have the Bucks at 47, the Celtics at 45, the Sixers at 45, the Nets at 44, the Raptors at 38, and then they do have the Heat still making their way up to 37, the Pacers at 37, and then below 500, either the Magic or the Hawks making as the 8, 7, 8. All right, that's the rating systems. That's our Tuesday breakdown. Coming up next, Rejecting the Screen. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai, located at 4646 South State Street, also located in Logan and in Linden. The great people, the Murdoch family, Blake and the crew, have done marvelous things along the way for us here on the Locked On Podcast Network, and we just love supporting them as well. I'm driving the Tucson right now. It is a super fun ride, and they've done a great job with that. The price value super. You get all the bells and whistles and the safety features along the way. We own 2 of the Santa Fe's. The Palisade is just gorgeous. If you're looking for a bigger SUV, that is just a beautiful, beautiful automobile. And the Sonata and Elantra, the sedans, have won major awards recently. Hyundai's got the market narrowed, a great price point with all the bells and whistles, safety features. They peak out on all the ratings. So if you're looking for a car, make sure you include a Hyundai in your list. You can decide what you like, but at least take a second and check out what Hyundai has for you. And when you do, email me first at dlock09@gmail.com. That's dlock09@gmail.com. Today's show is also brought to you by our friends over at grip6.com. Grip 6 people do great work. I love the belt because, well, one, it fits. Like, that's really the difference between, because you don't have the holes. right? So you have the patented system where it just locks into the right spot for you and fits. I also like how customizable it is. Right now you get the custom pack where you bundle their socks, their wallets, and their belts. But when I say customizable, I mean the fact that you can take the strap and the buckle and interchange them. And so when you do the strap and the buckle and you interchange them, you end up being able to buy like two straps, two buckles, and you end up with four belts. The web belt, Ninja belt, is $35 plus the promo code Locked On gets you 15% off. So make sure you check that out. Quality craftsman guaranteed, made in Utah, engineered with hole, no holes, flaps, or bulk. So it fits perfectly in an unlimited lifetime warranty. All sorts of great setups, the work built to work. The work belts are cool. I told you about the Craftsman that I have. That's probably my favorite is the Honeycomb belt. I think it's out of the Conservation Series. When you go up to the website and check it out, that's kind of my favorite one right now is the Honeycomb one. That's what I wear most with my navy blue belt. The Craftsman wood, I also wear a great deal with my brown belt. And then my black is the Ninja belt. So that's kind of how I have it set up. Unless I start flipping them around and changing, and that's the coolest part about all of it. So go check it out. It is at the Conservation Buckle. Honeycomb comes in two flavors, by the way. They also have a really cool one if you're a fisherman or if you like hunting. Ev's got some cool stuff on that. Check it all out. It is at grip6.com. Noah Kozlov, Adam Stanko host Rejecting the Screen. They do great in-depth interviews with all sorts of people around the NBA. And over the last few years, they've had numerous people tell them about Kobe Bryant. So here's today's special segment in tribute to Kobe on the one-year anniversary of his passing.
This is Adam Stanko from the Rejecting the Screen podcast. It's unfathomable to think that a year has passed since that you'll never forget where you were moment when we all found out Kobe Bryant, his daughter Gigi, and seven others died tragically in a helicopter crash. Everyone associated with the NBA has a Kobe story because he meant so much to so many of us. Our way to honor Kobe was to compile some of our favorite stories from interviews my co-host Noah Kozlov and I conducted with teammates, opponents, coaches, and writers who had something to say about the man who famously wore number 8 and number 24. We put together all of those stories, many of which you've never heard before, on a two-part podcast on Rejecting the Screen, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're about to play an excerpt from part one, which drops on Tuesday, January 26th, with part two coming on January 28th. Subscribe to the pod today so you can listen to both episodes as soon as they're released. We pick up the story as Kobe was ranked as the top prep player in the nation, and his status as a local legend was exploding. There were even rumors of the Lower Merion High School prodigy practicing with the Sixers and dominating the Sixers star wing Jerry Stackhouse in games of one-on-one. Rex Walters was on the Sixers in 96 and told us how he remembered it.
Kobe did come to practices, or he would come afterwards and come work out at St. Joe's, because me not knowing who Kobe was, I didn't follow high school basketball. I was an NBA player. I wasn't into that. I'm sitting there. I'm leaving to go home. I'm kind of straightening it up in the locker room, and Kobe sure enough walks in. And I'm like just making conversation with this kid. I'm like, hey, you know, what you doing here? He's like, yeah, I'm going to go work out. And I'm like, oh, you're a pretty good player. Like, this guy had to be looking at me like, what are you, some kind of idiot or something? Because, you know, and then I'm like, well, you know, what schools you looking at? He's like, oh, you know, I'm talking to Kansas. I'm talking to Carolina. He's like, but there's one other thing I'm thinking about. And I'm like, oh, okay. I was like, well, hey, you know, Dean Smith was a great coach for Michael Jordan. You know, you should think about Carolina. Obviously, Coach Williams is my coach, great coach. You should think about those schools, trying to help out my guy. You know, next thing you know, next preseason game, this guy's freaking like yelling over to his point guard, Nick Van Exel, like, hey, you know, I'm guarding him. Like, I got a mouse over here. I got a mouse. I'm like, man, that's a little disrespectful. I tried to help you, my man, and you're calling mouse in the house on me. So obviously he had to be thinking to himself, what is this guy talking about?
So back to Kobe as the nation's top high school player and those rumors we are hearing of Kobe regularly beating Stackhouse one-on-one. We talked to Jeff Perlman, who wrote the incredible book Three Ring Circus, Kobe, Shaq, Phil, and the Crazy Years of the Laker Dynasty. He said that story was all fabricated.
It's crap. Like, it's actually crap. It's just total BS. And it's funny because I reached out to, because you hear all these stories, right? You hear all these stories about Kobe and he's he's with the Sixers and he's lighting them up and blah, blah, blah. And he was definitely a great player and definitely showed his skills. And the guys were like, yeah, this guy's going to be something. But I reached out to Stackhouse via Twitter. I profiled Stackhouse for the Wall Street Journal years ago. And I just reached out to him. I don't have a tweet in front of me, but he wrote like, I'm sure like, this is the first thing I think of when people say, will so-and-so regret having spoken about Kobe? Like, he basically said, I've never heard Kobe say they were true, but I've also never heard him say they were false. So F him. and like, the thing that I think is really cool about Kobe and the Sixers workouts, he did not dominate Jerry Stackhouse, pure BS, but he took it to those guys. Imagine being, I remember I ran college, I ran cross country at University of Delaware. And I remember my first year freshman year, I went out to run with the rest of the team. And they were all seniors, and these guys were like all state and all county and all these great runners. And I was terrified. Like, I was absolutely terrified. I just wanted to hang with them. I was terrified. I was scared. I was just praying I'd be able to do it. This guy's running with the Philadelphia 76ers as a high school kid and like holding his own and doing it. Like, that's insane. And then the other thing, when he was in high school, that I really like is he would work out. I got to remember the specifics. I'm going to actually reread the book before it comes out. So I, you know, which is sad that you have to do, but you do have to do is he would work out and he drove from one workout to another workout place in the summer and made sure the heat in his car would be at full blast as he was driving just to build up his endurance. So like, I think he worked out at a track. It was like a 90 degree day outside in Philly, very humid, hot. Gets in the car, blasts the heat all the way, drives to the other workout. Like, he did little things like that that were just absolutely insane all the time.
It's 1996 and you're Kobe Bryant. You have an unparalleled level of self-confidence. You've proven to yourself that you can run with the Sixers. And just a year prior, you watched as another high schooler, Kevin Garnett, got selected fifth overall in the 95 draft. So what does Kobe do? He becomes the first guard ever to skip college and enter the draft. And by the way, he was just 17 at the time. 17 years old.
Kobe, of course, gets selected 13th overall by the Charlotte Hornets, who immediately trade him to the Lakers for Vlade. Coming into that draft, everyone expected him to end up in L.A., and we talked to a couple of people on the pod who were with teams in that year's lottery. First up, former Vancouver Grizzlies coach and GM, Stu Jackson. The Grizzlies had the number 3 pick and ended up taking Sharif Abdul-Rahim. But we straight up asked Stu, why didn't the Grizz take Kobe Bryant?
You know, he was a high school player. We were a very young franchise. And, you know, I think to draft a high school player at that point in our development as a franchise would have really been going out on a limb, not having this player proven himself against, you know, a higher level of competition. Although I will tell you, you know, Kobe was extremely talented. But the other aspect of Kobe was he was not going to any franchise other than the Los Angeles Lakers. Now, he got drafted by a different franchise, but that quickly turned around and he ended up in Los Angeles, and everyone in the draft knew that at that point. So we didn't think that was an option for Kobe Bryant coming to a new country or to Vancouver to play basketball. So he was sort of off the board.
Leaving the country to play might not have been in Kobe's plans, but would he have played for the Dallas Mavericks, who had the 9th overall pick? Remember at the time, the Mavs had Jason Kidd running the point, and later in their careers, Kobe tried desperately to get the Lakers to trade for Kidd. Well, former Nets head coach Butch Beard was an assistant with the Mavericks in 96, and he told us that he thinks they had a shot at getting the high school sensation to come to Dallas.
Here's the best story of all, and a true story as well. I was an assistant coach with Jim Clemens and also at the Dallas Mavs. We're in the draft, and I asked the people who, you know, run the draft, I mean, all our scouts, I said, who's the best guy in the draft? They said, Kobe Bryant. He's a high school kid, but he's not, we don't know. We think he's going to be the best. And they didn't know whether at that particular time they were going to break up 3J. Okay. So I made a comment to them. I said, why don't we bring him in and try him out? I know that the word was out there that he only wanted to go to LA. I said, but I think he would want to play with Jason and Jimmy if you all think that he's going to be the best player in the draft. We were afraid to do that. We ended up drafting Samaki Walker. I'll never forget. I was running around all over, you know, working out Eric Dampier and some other players, and you know, but I said, man, that's what we should have done. I sat there, even those 5 minutes before we drafted, I said, we should draft this kid.
Why were they afraid to even not even to bring him in?
Because the word had gotten out there that he wasn't going to, you know, he wasn't going to work out for other teams and things like that. I said, I think he would come and at least give us a, you know, a look-see. I really do.
You can hear the rest of our Kobe Stories special on Rejecting the Screen. Subscribe to the podcast today and hear part one on Tuesday, January 26th, and part two on January 28th. It's all part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Thanks to Adam and Noah for that. Now, go tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of podcast Locked On today. And I'll be with you for postcast after the Jazz and the Knicks.